Okay, so today we're going deep on a First Amendment case. And you might think obscenity law, really, but stick with us because this one gets really interesting. We're looking at Pope v. Illinois, a 1987 case that really changed how we think about art and literature and free speech.
Yeah, and especially how much local opinions can actually influence what's considered valuable.
Right, exactly. Like, can somewhere just decide that Shakespeare is worthless because they don't like it?
Well, that's kind of what Pope v. Illinois had to sort out.
So to set this up, we're going to be looking at the Supreme Court's decision in Pope v. Illinois.
It's all about how the court clarified a big part of the Miller test, which, remember, is how we legally figure out if something is obscene.
Right. And specifically, how do we determine if something have serious artistic or literary value? You know, the Miller test. A work is considered obscene if it meets three criteria. One, it appeals to a prurient interest, meaning it's designed to cause lustful thoughts. Two, it's patently offensive based on community standards. And three, it lacks serious literary, artistic, political, or scientific value.
Yeah, and Polk v. Illinois zeroes in on that third part, the value aspect. But first, to see why this even went to the Supreme Court, we got to go back to 1983 in Illinois. Two bookstore clerks were arrested for selling adult magazines.
To undercover police officers, they were convicted under state obscenity laws. But here's the catch.
The jury was told to use Illinois' contemporary community standards to figure out if the magazines had any serious value, you know, literary, artistic, political, or scientific.
So that instruction to the jury, that's what sparked this whole First Amendment challenge.
The clerks, they argued that letting a local community completely decide what's valuable, you know, that just stomps all over free speech rights.
Makes sense. Like what one town thinks is artistic, another might totally disagree.
Right. They lost in the Illinois courts, but the Supreme Court saw this as like a much bigger deal and decided to hear the case. So the fundamental question becomes, should the value of something be judged just by what people in that specific area think, or should there be some kind of standard that's, you know, more objective?
Totally. So that's where the Miller test comes back in. Remember that three-part test for obscenity?
Right. So the first part is whether the material, you know, is designed to be like sexually arousing.
The second is whether it's offensive according to those community standards. And that makes sense, right? Like what's okay in one place might not be in another.
Yeah, exactly. Like things are going to be different in, say, rural Montana than in New York City.
Totally. But then that third part, the value part, that's where things get tricky. Because should that also be up to like what the local community thinks?
Well, in Pope v. Illinois, that's exactly what the lower courts did. They applied community standards to all three parts of the Miller test.
The Supreme Court was like, hold up. They said community standards. Yeah, that works for judging what's offensive, but should we really let a town council decide if like Picasso is valuable art?
Right, and that's why they came up with the reasonable person standard for that third prong of the Miller test. So instead of just relying on what people in a specific community might think now, the question is, would a reasonable person find value in this material?
And that's a huge difference, right? Because now it's not about whether like your neighbor thinks something's good. It's about whether a reasonable person anywhere would find value in it.
Yeah, it takes it out of the hands of maybe a biased local community and tries to make it more universal. Like, even
Yeah.
if you personally don't like something, can a reasonable person find value in it? That's the question.
So how did the court actually justify making that change to the Miller test?
Well, Justice White, who wrote the majority opinion, he made this really key distinction. He said, what people find offensive, yeah, that can totally change depending on where you are. That's why we have the community standards part of the Miller test for that second prong. But he said the value of a work, like whether something is truly artistic or literary, that shouldn't just vanish because you crossed a state line.
Which makes sense, right? Because like a book doesn't suddenly become a bad book just because you're in a town that bans it.
Exactly. So the court said when you're figuring out that third part of the Miller test, the value part, the real question should be, would a reasonable person find value in this material? And you have to look at the work as a whole.
And that reasonable person standard that really protects controversial art and literature, because now it can't just be censored because a town doesn't like it.
Right. It has to pass this higher bar. Can any reasonable person anywhere find value in it?
Interesting, though, even though they said the jury instructions were wrong, the Supreme Court didn't just throw out the convictions for those bookstore clerks. they sent the case back down for something called a harmless error review.
Right, because even if the judge gave the jury some bad instructions, maybe it wouldn't have mattered. Maybe no reasonable jury would have found value in those magazines, even if they were told to use the reasonable person standard.
So the Illinois courts had to decide if a properly instructed jury would still have convicted them.
Which, you know, really shows how important it is to get the legal procedures right, especially when it comes to constitutional rights.
But of course, it wasn't a unanimous decision.
Right. Justice Scalia, even though he agreed with the outcome, he pointed out that even this reasonable person standard, it's still kind of subjective. Like, who gets to decide what a reasonable person thinks?
Good question.
And then on the other side, you had Justices Brennan, Marshall, and Stevens, who all dissented.
Justice Brennan, a huge advocate for free speech, he argued that this whole Miller test, it's just fundamentally flawed. Like, how can you even define obscenity without limiting free expression? It's tough.
And Justice Stevens, he was more concerned about how unfair the original jury instructions were to the defendants. So, you know, this wasn't an easy case. There were a lot of different opinions on how to balance free speech with, you know, societal concerns about what some might consider harmful content.
So the big takeaway here is that Pope v. Illinois really changed the game for protecting art and literature, especially stuff that's controversial or edgy. Prosecutors can't just point to local community standards and say, see, nobody thinks this is valuable.
It's a much higher burden now. They have to prove that no reasonable person anywhere would find any value in the work at all.
And that's probably why obscenity cases are way less common now. That reasonable person standard, it's a hard standard to meet.
So if you're going into law, Pope v. Illinois is a huge case for understanding the First Amendment and how courts try to balance free speech with community standards. It shows how even a small change to a legal test can have like these massive ripple effects.
Totally. And it makes you think about how even standards that are supposed to be objective, like this reasonable person standard, well, they can still be open to different interpretations.
Right. And it really highlights the debate over what role the law should have in deciding what's moral or what's art. So much to consider. And thanks for taking this deep dive with us.
Definitely food for thought.